Well, hi, welcome to today's webinar hosted by KyNexus. It's titled The Importance of Trust in Continuous Improvement. I'm Mark Rabin, a senior advisor with KyNexus, and I'm thrilled that you're joining us today. I'm thrilled that our presenter is here. She is Colleen Sapelsa, and you will learn more about her in a minute, and she's going to tell you more about her really interesting career and background, and it's going to be a great session here today. Just one other quick announcement. If this is your first time attending a KyNexus webinar, we invite you to visit our website and learn more about our software solutions. You can join at kynexus.com and learn more about what the company does. So then with that, let me tell you a little bit about our presenter, Colleen Sapelsa, and she's going to tell you more about her background. Next slide, please. So Colleen Sapelsa is a Lean and Six Sigma transformation leader with more than 20 years of experience across a range of industries, the automotive industry at Toyota, in aviation at GE Aviation, now GE Aerospace, and the aerospace and defense industry at L3Harris. Colleen's been committed to creating breakthrough thinking environments based on the respect for people principle, which people will recognize with some Toyota roots there, specifically working in the area of trust as a non-negotiable for a lean culture. And just, you know, as a personal aside here, you know, Colleen introduced herself to me about a year and a half ago. I had just moved to Cincinnati and she lives in the area, and she's been, you know, very welcoming. We've had great discussions and great conversations about trust and culture and psychological safety. So I know we're in for a great session today. So with that, Colleen, thank you for your collaborations and thank you for being here today. Here we go.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been such a pleasure, you know, just to collaborate together, get to know you better. And this is a really important topic. And I think it is also one that is, you know, it's coming at a time where so much is going on in the world. And I'll talk to that a little bit later in this presentation, but I'm just going to touch upon really briefly my background here. So as Mark mentioned, I'm native to Cincinnati, Ohio, left for about 13 years, lived and worked in both Japan and Italy. These are just some little snippets of what I would consider some areas of interest. Worked at Toyota, GE Aviation, now Aerospace. And I'm currently the continuous improvement leader at L3Harris Technologies, really amazing company. And they are located a little bit outside of Cincinnati in Mason. And what I love the most about these products, been there for about 3 years, but you know, they make vision systems, these products that help people to see in extremely hostile environments. So ocean, land, air, and space, really pushing the boundaries of physics. And I found that product so meaningful. And on another level, something that, you know, I feel like I'm trying to do in my own role. I do see trust as foundational for continuous improvement. I'll go into that very, very soon. And my mission is just to reduce suffering in manufacturing, and specifically in aerospace and defense. Some of my interests, and that picture you see in the middle, that is called the Pillars of Creation, and that's taken from the James Webb satellite or telescope. So I'm going to move forward here. So I want to go back into very briefly this 2 week experience I had when I was being onboarded at Toyota, and this was back in the early 2000s. But we had about 2 weeks of onboarding, and that first week, you're actually on an assembly line. Granted, it's an easy, simple assembly, but in that onboarding experience, you're really they really want to take the time with you to walk you through the culture. So 1 week on the assembly line and another week is fully dedicated to nothing but culture. So you go through all of the principles. You're really immersed in this one voice type of culture that really emphasizes how everyone in every function, you're all on the same side. And then we had a lot of dialogue, and one question was asked to our sensei, who was a older gentleman. I would say he was about, 70 years old or so, but somebody asked, why aren't organizations more successful with lean methodologies? And he didn't hesitate, but went over to a whiteboard and wrote this symbol on the whiteboard, and it's pronounced gan, meaning cancer in Japanese. And I don't know if that, on some level, my father is a pulmonary specialist. He passed away about six years ago, but maybe at some level that connected with me because of his own, life spent trying to eliminate cancer in the medical field. I really related with that statement, and it always, it's like it imprinted itself on my mind. But what they said in the examples, what our sensei said using these examples was, it's this internal conflict that occurs within organizations when people are competing. And it's almost like the cancer cells are eating the healthy cells and bringing, to the detriment of the host. So that would be the organization. And I found that so powerful of an image, this internal competition that is going on within organizations. So this thought, it evolved over time, but I transferred into, I was in supply chain within Toyota, working specifically in purchasing. And then right around 2011, I pivoted my career and my industry from automotive into aerospace and defense. And I started working more as a Lean Six Sigma, say, project manager, but I was facilitating on both the production and on the transactional sides, helping to use a lot of these Lean Six Sigma and project management tools to really help drive out waste and provide some coaching in that area. I absolutely loved it. And it's a lot of what I do. But this, getting back to this interpretation and connection to gan or cancer, is I saw all these examples. I had a front row seat working primarily in the working and in the professional levels of the organization, having a front row seat to all of these dynamics that are taking place within the middle management. And I saw a lot of examples of, this internal competition. And one thing I do want to state up close, up front, is how all of these opinions are my own, and they're really reflections taken over these two decades of experience. But I saw a lot of examples that were, in my opinion, very much founded in insecurity and ego. And over time, I started to see this ego is really this breakdown in trust due to this lack of connection to shared value systems. And this ego prevents us from really forming these strong human connections. And I do borrow from Brené Brown here, from her book, Atlas of the Heart, when I define connection as what exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, and when they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. So it keeps getting back to this relationship and this idea of, being vulnerable, all pointing back to trust. So, over time, these past, I would say, 15 years, I've really been honed in on trust. And I strongly feel that lean fails in environments with weak relationships based on trust. So nothing new here, but I feel like if you ask people what trust means, you're going to get 20 different definitions. So I do like to state the one that I most closely align with, which is by Charles Feltman. And once again, you're going to keep hearing these types of words over and over again: trust, vulnerability, interpersonal connection. But it's trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of others. And I think this is an area also why Mark and I really connected with all of his work around psychological safety. All of these words are, they're really part of the same nucleus of human connection. Now, over these 15 years, I really got interested in this organization called Great Place to Work. And they have over four decades of deep, deep research into trust. They've come up with this trust model, and they have served thousands of companies globally in pooling data and really driving some very interesting conclusions. What I love about this model is that it's from the employee point of view, and it kind of organizes it into these three very deep relationships. You have relationship with management, relationship with other employees, and then you have the relationship to your job. And it's described within these five key dimensions of respect, credibility, fairness, camaraderie, and pride. And that was always embedded in my mind, this trust model, along with this onboarding statement about cancer, this cancer existing in a lot of Western organizations. So I, you know, this develops over time. Now, I'm going to take a little bit of an academic spin here, and I'm going to start pointing out some specific, I would say, problem-solving definitions. And when you're working in the root cause analysis area, and this first one is called the point of cause. And that is like at the core center of, you know, the reason why you're experiencing problems. And if I had to compare this to a medical condition, I would say the point of cause would be like the virus. Something else called a point of occurrence, which I will go into in just a bit, would kind of be like congestion. And then a point of recognition, that will be like the cough. So let's go into this a little bit deeper. Here you see an image of a tree. So those roots, point of cause, the point of occurrence, gotta love those acronyms. That's kind of in the middle. That's where it starts to have a context. And then that point of recognition, think of that as the leaves. That's what's being shown to you in a very physical manifestation of the problem. That's going to be your symptom. So how I relate this in the trust model is, you know, I see those five different call them dimensions, is kind of those points of occurrence, because you have to put trust into a context. So I see that as the points of occurrence. And what I'm going to go into next, if you bear with me, I'm going to go into points of recognition. These are going to be the very physical manifestations of when your trust in the organization is lacking. So I want you to keep your eye peeled on that little triangle, that little warning sign that's going to pop up across my next couple slides here. So we're going to start out with respect. And what I'm doing is I'm putting this into the context of lean. So here's a definition here of respect, and it's when employees feel respected by management, assess employees' perceptions of professional support, collaboration, and involvement in decisions, and the level of care management shows for employees. Let me go over that again. Assess employees' perceptions of professional support, collaboration, and involvement in decisions, and the level of care management shown for employees as people. Okay, so let's think about that a little bit. What is the point of, you know, a really strong point of recognition for me? It would be having poor strategy deployment. That is one of my top I would say pitfalls I see in organizations is this failure to align both vertically as well as horizontally. And it is astounding to me that, you know, three quarters of organizations, they don't connect between their strategy and the tactics. And if you can imagine going to work every day and you don't really have a strong sense of purpose in how your role, how what you're working on in any way is contributing up to those higher level strategies within the organization. I just see that as kind of kills your soul coming in every day as an employee facing that problem. You know, over 70% of executives understand the strategy, but when you ask, you know, the Gemba, people closest to the products and the services, they're usually very much left behind. So we have this, you know, this disconnect forming. So I'm going to go into credibility. And once again, this falls within that management, that relationship to management. And it's employees see management as credible, believable, and trustworthy, and assess employees' perceptions of management's communication, practices, competence, and integrity. One of the value systems I wanted to emphasize here that is often broken in these connections we form, it's within the, it's called the SQDC hierarchy, standing for safety, quality, delivery, and cost. And how we see this is in some unethical behavior. So that is one very concrete way, a manifestation of this break in our interpersonal connection around shared value systems, the SQDC hierarchy. It's, you know, cost is going to be a positive outcome of making the right decisions up front, where safety is given the highest priority, followed by quality, and then delivery. So that's known as the SQDC hierarchy. And, you know, we're in a period where our ethics are very much, you know, at the in the news a lot. And I find it challenging for a lot of different reasons, but it all goes back to this core area of trust and beginning to build better interpersonal connection between ourselves and, you know, our leadership. So I'm going to move on now to fairness. We're just going to kind of loop right around this trust model. And how I see the manifestation, once again, that point of recognition, it's going to be with this high turnover. So right now we have, in general, within industry, very high turnover. Attrition rates are in the news a lot. Things such as quiet quitting. That's one of the you know, big areas of research. I have shown here 55% of U.S. workers say they've had direct colleagues voluntarily leave their organization with the past 6 months. You know, 55% have wondered if their pay is enough. 53% have wondered if there are better opportunities out there. So we're going through a period of very high mobility. And that is also coupled with we're having a lot of baby boomer retirements right now. So you're seeing a lot of just general movement within organizations. Okay, so I'm going to go through and talk about camaraderie. And I would say the big value system under attack here would be servant leadership. So this is it's a more of an enlightened leadership model. It's where leaders are removing barriers from the Gemba so that they can more effectively advance and get the work done. But what you'll see as an outcome often is this low engagement, which has been stubbornly stuck right around the 25 to 30% range for decades now. And some really good Gallup research showing, 81% in absenteeism, 43% in turnover for low turnover organizations. Just some really good statistics here that show what a drain this has on companies. So pride, what is the biggest, once again, point of recognition for in this pride area, all relating back to lack of trust? Well, how I see it is in poor standardization. And when I say poor standardization, I'm talking about work standards or standard work. Each different things, but they all are part of this broader tool referred to as standardization, which forms one of the essential pillars of the House of Lean. And one of the big symptoms within organizations is much like this image here, it's in firefighting. So when companies do not have that integrity in their processes, employees are often left to kind of come up with their own tribal ways of working. And this is really, when it comes down to it, a failure in quality thinking. And I would say, like right now, we're going through a very a challenging time where we're really having to get back to the basics of quality thinking. And I would call that out as the value system that is under attack in this area. It's getting back to those fundamentals by founders such as, Ono and Deming and Dr. Duran, but realizing that the only way through this tunnel is to really embracing the purity of scientific thinking so that whatever we're doing, we have a really strong theory for how we work. There is a description for how we work. And above all, there's always the opportunity to question how we work. And that has been, I guess, one of the key areas relating back to the industry broadly is really really promoting the people closest to both the products and the services as being the best people to improve them, to advance them, to see every process that they're working on as a repetitive process, and to begin doing that root cause problem solving so that they're coming up with the countermeasures on their own to solve their own problems, and giving them the proper level of support and the resources necessary. So I've mentioned this earlier about this current environment that we're in. So we kind of have a perfect storm, I would say. We're coming out of two or three years of one of the most challenging periods of our time, going through COVID, this pandemic effect of the unknown, not knowing what you're really going to be waking up to every day, seeing terrible news, and just having an overwhelming sense of the unknown, the sense of panic. So I think people, whether we want to admit it or not, we're all walking around with some degree of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're in a real period of healing. This has all been aggravated by a lot of political polarization. Don't need to, pick up a paper to know that that's a constant in our news cycle. I mentioned before, we have a lot of high attrition and high mobility that's going on within organizations, and a lot of turmoil with just geopolitics. A lot of that has been taking up the news as well. And this is all kind of aggravated by remote work. So we're disconnected from each other. And I would say 80% of our communication, it's through that face-to-face interaction. Our body language is giving off cues. It's giving off certain nonverbal communication. And when you cut that off, or it's diluted, you know, through remote work, we really begin to lose that personal connection to each other. And that's further eroding this idea of trust is foundational to Lean. So I found trust is like a broader concept sometimes than compared to like respect for people. I know that is definitely called out in the Lean environment as being a key principle, but I would say right now where we are currently parked, that we have a much bigger issue at hand than simply respect for people. Okay, so I'm going to start talking here on some of the innovation that I see coming out over the past 10 years or so that for me have really remained constants as disruptors in this space that are flipping the model and really approaching our whole way of working in a completely different way. So I'm going to be talking about social networking methods, the neuroscience community, and also ecosystem frameworks. The really tricky part of dealing with this lack of trust and a lot of more of these people-centric issues is that it always boils down to the now what? Now what are we going to do with that? How are we going to fix that? What do next steps look like? And I'm going to go back to that medical comparison I made earlier, you know, with the gone and the cancer and comparing the root cause to the virus and congestion and then a cough. But I'm going to say, you know, to treat these people issues when we're only relying on things like surveys or workshops, well-intended. But I really see that as trying to x-ray a sick patient back into a state of health. Like, I don't think it can end there. You really need to provide a context and a way to practice a lot of these skills, which, let's face it, we've kind of been kicked back to crawling in terms of, you know, where we are dialed in at human connection. We have to relearn these again, how to communicate with each other all over again. So about 2 years ago, a buddy of mine from GE Power, now called GE Vernova, kept begging me to try out this new method that's really catching fire over there and having really great response and results. And I am embarrassed to tell you that I avoided launching a pilot for 18 months, if I'm quite honest with you. But I finally got around to it. I did launch a pilot, 25 people. And what it is this method that is a peer support network group. You meet in a circle of 4 to 6 people, 1 hour a week, over the course of 12 weeks. And it has a completely pure mission. But if I had to define it in my own words, I would say it allowed me to clearly see my own gaps in terms of my own focus or lack of focus, as well as my ability to better connect with people. It clearly shows you in the kindest of ways your gaps in these two areas. And there was a before Colleen and an after Colleen. I feel like this was actually a marker in my life because I was able to finally address some of my weak areas. But it's a pure mission here. It's, you know, it has the 5 elements of relationships, visible work, generosity, purposeful discovery, growth mindset. But it very much functions as a grassroots movement We had a 94% satisfaction score from the pilot, and 80% of those participants, they are so enthusiastic afterwards, they start their own peer network circles on their own. So this spreads organically within the organization. And going, once again, going back to that comparison of the gone, the cancer, I see this as immunotherapy. It changes organizations at the cellular level. And it every time I go through one, I keep learning new things about myself and feel a surge of belonging as a result in going to work. So you can just think about all the positive effects that has. So let's move on to the neuroscience community. So much interesting information surfacing within the neuroscience community. Business is finally catching up to science. Goodness, finally catching up. You have a lot of amazing authors out there. Carol Dweck, she wrote a book called Mindset. Paul Zak, he wrote a book called The Trust Factor. I've really been getting into Professor Bob Sutton out of Stanford. He wrote a book called The Friction Project and many others. But these are just a few names in this area. But it's really identifying the changes in our brain based on scientific research and what happens as the result of not having the proper level of support, not having trust on our ability to learn. And I'm just so glad to see more and more come about in relationship to the neuroscience community. And lastly, we have ecosystem frameworks. Now, these would be, I would say, collective efforts, usually between universities and organizations, companies, and also perhaps with professional organizations. And one that really comes to mind that I have just, I cannot speak highly enough, is this one that developed out of Toyota, and it's called the FAME program. And it has been now taken over by the Manufacturing Institute, also known as the National Association of Manufacturing. But they have created it's an associate program. They identify candidates within high school, and they start them out by working part of the time in actual Toyota factories. So they are creating this advanced manufacturing degree, and it allows them to then come out of school without any debt, but they're able to hit the ground running. They have already been baptized in many of these principles, so that they're coming in already being very good, I would say, stewards of the culture itself. So I would, whenever I can, I try to advocate for them, because I think that is very much the model of the future. So social networking methods, neuroscience community, and ecosystem frameworks. So real briefly, I know we're coming up on the 40 minutes, and then I'm going to kind of go over and summarize some of the key points that I just went through. But I am part of a collective learning think tank. It's called CI Countermeasures. It's hosted by a woman by the name of Catherine Belcher. And we're working on this lean readiness assessment. And all it is, it's using that trust model in those five dimensions and just asking five simple questions. Because my thought here is that, you know, under a certain percentage, when you are delivering these questions to, say, 30 people closest to the product or service within an organization, if they are getting under a certain percentage, I would actually argue that it's too low to even attempt any type of lean transformation. There's not the sufficient level of trust, be it within the relationship with management or relationship to coworkers or relationship to your own job that is sufficient in order to even attempt getting serious about lean. But what it will allow you to do is hone in on what area is the weakest so that you have an awareness. I don't have all the answers. I'm going to be very vulnerable with you here. It's not that I'm some expert and have this all figured out. Not at all. I'm struggling right along with each and every one of you on this front. But I do want to say that, you know, at the end of my career, at the end of my life, I always want to look back on it and feel like I brought myself to work and that my presence in the workplace somehow mattered. And I wasn't concerned about fitting in, so to speak. That has always seemed like a real, you know, that's the easy thing to do is just fit in. I am not in, once again, I'm not in consultancy. I'm solidly within an industry. And I just hope that over time, there's a lot more awareness generated about not only our failure to trust each other, but also in different methods that are being developed that are actually having amazing results within manufacturing and other industries as well. But once again, just to kind of circle back here, I'm just going to kind of pedal backwards and go to this original slide I showed. So just once again, you know, going back to trust and that point of cause, it's really at the center of everything we're doing at work from an employee standpoint. And it's going to flavor our relationship with management, relationship with other employees, and the relationship to our job. And a lot of those failures in the relationships are really based on not having shared value systems. And one of the, you know, the biggest ones when looking at this top half, I would say it's around constancy of purpose, the difference between that long and short-term thinking. So let me do a real quick time check here. I think we are wrapping up on about 40 minutes, and I'm going to advance towards the end.
Yeah, and you're okay on time.
We're not pleased.
Go ahead.
So if we have any questions at all, now would be the time. Okay. And I'm not looking at any of the chat, Mark, so.
Yeah, well, there's a couple questions. If you can advance back to the slides toward the end, we'll do a couple of quick announcements and then Q&A. So I'll encourage people, please continue submitting questions through the Q&A button. There we go.
There we go. Sorry about that.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you for that, Colleen. Well, I'll tell you a couple quick announcements. Upcoming webinars, the next one, still trying to finalize details. Registration is not yet open yet, but I believe the next webinar will be December 7th. Lynn Kelly presenting on themes related to her recently released book that she co-authored with John Shook, who a lot of people would know from Toyota Roots, Lean Enterprise Institute. That book is called Change Questions. That book is available now. You will, since you're an attendee of this webinar, and potentially others in the past, you'll get an email invitation to register for this webinar when that opens up. And then I think in December, I think our very own Stephanie Hill from the Kinexus team is going to be doing a webinar presentation in December on a lean management theme to be announced later. I also want to invite everybody to check out the Kinexus Webinars On Demand Library. If you go to kinexus.com/webinars, there are well over 100 previous webinar recordings in there for you and your team to enjoy and discuss. Next slide, please. We invite people to check out some of the other resources and content on the Kinexus website. You can go to blog.kinexus.com. There are a couple of blog posts on there every week about different continuous improvement topics, lean or otherwise. You can see a couple of the recent posts were about CI and lean, or lean and catchball as an approach. So we encourage you to go to blog.kinexus.com. And then one final slide. I don't know why I stumbled over the word kinexus. I say it a lot. Yeah. I'll slow down a little bit. We invite you to check out the Kinexus podcast. You can find that at kinexus.com/podcast. You can find it in all of the major podcast apps. If there's one where you can't find it, please email me, mark@kinexus.com, and we'll get it submitted to that app. The audio of today's session will be available later today in the podcast feed. So if you'd like to revisit this or share it with others in the audio format, it is there in the podcast. And so with that, we'll go to the final, the Q&A slide. You can email Colleen, you can email me. So we'll leave that up and running. Questions that came in. First off, Colleen, a fairly tactical question. Are you able to share that readiness assessment as a separate document?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everything I do like has in this area has like no monetization or commercialization involved. So open sharing, absolutely. I am presenting it to the team in about two or three weeks. And after that, yeah, open source, free to share. You can even, you know, change the questions on it. We have to kind of figure out in what format will it be shared. But I think... Just not to make that be the overriding constraint here, but just get it out and allow others to play with it. But I really do think it will allow both internal and external consultants to have a tool, a really quick assessment. Mm-hmm. So I'll have that ready in about 2 to 3 weeks, promise.
Okay, so if you can reach out and email... Yep. Colleen, it's on, her email address is on the slide there.
Okay, absolutely.
We have another question. How can we make the distinction between trust and psychological safety in a lean transformation?
Oh, gosh, that's a great one. Oh, that's
really
a great
weighty
one.
Question. That's real.
Yeah, yeah. So I find you have to, like with trust, and once again, not an expert. I'm struggling along with everyone else, but you have to define it and you have to put trust in a context, or it's just this like really broad word and you can't have a meaningful dialogue around it if you don't define your language. And that's what Mark Graben helped me to do so well with psychological safety, because it does have a more defined definition, and the four stages of psychological safety spells it out in even more specificity. And it's that language that allows you to have meaningful discussions. So we talk past each other with these topics, these types of very people-centric words. So I would just say, you know, psychological safety is a huge component of trust, but for trust to really even be a point of discussion, it has to find a context. And I don't know, Mark, if you want to speak more to that, but I find psychological safety is one of the most key manifestations of trust.
Yeah. And, you know, one way of defining psychological safety, kind of mashing together different definitions, is, you know, a belief, or you could say a feeling or a perception that one has. So like, for example, you know, that I can speak up and use my voice in different ways to ask a question, to point out a problem, to share an opportunity for improvement, that I feel like, I believe that I can do those things without being punished or marginalized in some way. So I think trust is really incorporated into that. I trust you, Colleen, that I can give feedback without you punishing me for that. You know, so a belief and trust are interesting words to kind of think about. Like I have this belief, I trust you to react this way until you don't. If you violate that trust, I might no longer have the belief that I can speak up without harm or punishment. But trust, probably there's broader components to that beyond.
It's very broad. Yes.
Safety, right? I mean, I love that definition. You share it. I'm going to just read it again. Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of others. So you think of what's important to you. Maintaining your paycheck and your standard of living at a fairly fundamental level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that people trust their leaders to not jeopardize that. They trust the organization. You know, you're collaborating and you're putting that at risk, but based on the decisions of others. I think
yes,
that would be another example of where trust comes into play, right?
Yeah, and you know, things like the act of Kaizen itself. What could be more vulnerable than that? I mean, you're working together, you're brainstorming, you may be learning from your failures. That is one of the most vulnerable acts out there. And I think particularly in certain industries, you know, like healthcare, you've been in that, or aerospace and defense, the quality issues are impacting the most vulnerable of patients, either, you know, in hospitals or in aerospace and defense, you're talking about astronauts or our armed forces. So sometimes the nature of your product can actually counter the culture, and like being vulnerable is not always looked at as a positive thing. That's what I'm trying to say. The products are intended to make people invulnerable. So that's one of the interesting things I've found.
Yeah, or to reduce the risk or the danger. Yeah, it's situational, right? So in one team and one organization, it might not be risky or dangerous to share an idea for improvement. Sadly, in some organizations, it is. That's why I think it's interesting to label the act as vulnerable, not the person. Does that act create the risk of harm or loss? And it depends on the situation.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a great point. Great questions.
Another question here, back to the working out loud book and method that you talked about. Can you share a little bit? You said you avoided launching that pilot. Do you know what, like what was there a trust issue
or another
fear?
This is painful. I realized that I was too arrogant. I thought it was going to be kind of a mindfulness type of method where we have to get back in touch with our breath. At that time, it was in the first year of, you know, being at the company. It was that first year is always very stressful. I was like in a hyperventilation state. I just didn't have the bandwidth to even consider it. At the end of the day, I recognize that to learn this method is to actually remove a lot of the noise within your mind, the burden of excess, we'll call it, so that you do have a very streamlined focus. So, you know, it showed me my own arrogance. And in working that method, it also showed me a lot of my own failings in the area of empathy and just lack of focus. And so that was huge for me, because part of my role is to help people work better together and do things like, you know, strategy deployment where you're aligning, yet I couldn't do it for myself. Mm-hmm. And that became very clear through that method. And that is liberating. But you're doing it in a group. You're all supporting each other. So you're sharing and being vulnerable. And you come out with basically a group of great friends.
Hmm. Wanted to ask also, when you talked about that word gone and cancer, I've heard a phrase from former Toyota people when they talk about big company disease.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Did you also hear that phrase? And is that sort of a different way of saying some of the same thing? Or are there more elements to big company disease that we have to guard against?
I have to actually say, I never heard reference to anything negative outside of that one onboarding comment that was, you know, the response to a question. And I didn't feel like it was off the cuff kind of response. I felt like it was coming from a deeper reservoir of dialogue. Like there had been discussion about this, but it wasn't referred to as big company disease. I see it very much as being related. But I just, that imprinted itself on my mind that the cancer cells eating the healthy cells to the detriment of its host.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in that analogy, it's more like, you know, it's habits and behaviors that are the causes. It's not, you know, people as the cancer cells. You know, what I've heard, the Toyota people would say we're guarding against this of, you know, things like big company disease of, you know, being off the top of my head, too calcified in your ways of doing things, or being too slow to adopt changes, or too slow to react to challenges or problems, among other, you know, among other things.
Sure, sure. Great points.
Yeah. There's a comment in the chat that's, I think, worth sharing here. Jennifer is a big fan of the book, The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey.
Oh, yes.
That's the son of the late, great Stephen Covey of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People fame, among other things. So Stephen M. R. Covey suggests the four cores of credibility are integrity, intent, capability, and results. And he also suggests 13 behaviors that are tactical ways to develop trust or repair broken trust. And I'm sure that's easily Googleable.
Sure.
The Speed of Trust, 13 behaviors.
Oh, thank you for that. Yep. It's all part of the same conversation.
Yeah. When we talk about some of the tactical things that leader, you know, you can do to build trust. You did a great job of defining a lot of these terms and concepts and contributing factors, Colleen. But a leader can't just tell people like, "Hey, trust me. I'm exactly. new here, new to the role. I'm trustworthy. You should trust me." It's not that simple. Okay, that got a reaction out of you. Tell us more about why that doesn't work or what leaders should do tactically.
I feel for them. It's tough. It's like if I'm executive leader and they're trying to think like, how do I connect with people above and beyond words? And I think so much of it has to do with who the rewards and recognition systems. Are you rewarding and recognizing people who are living these new values? And to default to no action means that we're just going to stay in status quo. So they have to have very intentional behaviors to pivot in this new direction. And I think that they feel like they have such limited options on what buttons they can push. And that's why I find this social networking method so innovative, because it removes a lot of that pressure off of them so people can actually practice it and leaders can get involved as well. So why have this limited to just, you know, the working level or the middle level of the organization? Leaders can get involved in circles. But a big part of it is the behaviors that follow the words. That's always going to be, I think, a continued struggle in exploring the creative options there. But I just don't feel like, once again, X-raying the sick patient back into a state of health is, you know, that's not going to be sustainable.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. An x-ray might be helpful. Repeated x-rays are going to cause a problem or not get to the core of the issue. It's for sure. If you have a broken bone, the x-ray doesn't fix the broken bone. It might be a necessary step in determining how to heal that bone, right? Maybe one other question here before we wrap up here. I was really struck by your personal mission statement, reduce suffering in manufacturing. And the word suffering is a strong word. Mm-hmm. Of all the words, I'd be curious to hear some of the origin of like why that word best describes your mission.
Yeah. Well, I watched a Netflix documentary called The Downfall of Boeing. I don't know if many of you have watched that, but to hear all the stories of the many people, primarily like quality engineers, and how much pain they had to deal with and trying to do the right thing, but just not supported in their mission. But then more than anything, it goes back to the outcome of the people paying the price for the quality failures. There's just suffering at so many different levels within the company and also the customer themselves. And that's why that's what motivates me every day, keeping the end customers in mind, but also those people closest to the products and the services. They come with such passion every day. And, you know, we need to be such better supporters of them and giving them the tools and mechanisms so that they can improve their own processes.
Because sadly, in a bad culture and bad workplaces, there's a lot of suffering. I've kind of stated it differently. I'm not saying better, but just differently. The words I've chosen, going back to my first job out of college and seeing people suffering, is, you know, people shouldn't hate coming to work.
No.
Like, that sets the bar really low. Yeah. we could actually aim a lot higher than that.
Spend so many hours. Oh,
but it's sad when there's a dark cloud hanging over people's heads. And so the first step is to, okay, don't hate it here. And then we could strive towards, you know, you used a Deming phrase, constancy of purpose, I think, right? I think you said that.
Yes.
We can aim higher of what Dr. Deming talked about as being joy and pride in work. That's the more aspirational step. And I think trust is a big contributor to how we would get there.
Yeah. Yep. And we just have to explore things and be open to things that are actually working. And I can tell you, this social networking method exploding in Germany. So they have taken an American product and it is really spreading. And we just need to keep ourselves open to embracing what is working and learning from others. Yeah. And there's no shame. There is no shame in followership. I think that's oftentimes undervalued.
Well, that's a great point, and we'll leave it at that. We are out of questions. I think we're out of time. There are a lot of comments in the chat thanking you for a great session here today, Colleen. So I would like to amplify that and thank you. I want to thank the attendees for being here today. So again, you can contact Colleen. Her email address is on screen there. And we invite you to come back and attend future Kinexus webinars in a series. Lots of thank you, thank you, thank you. Great info. Thank you. So again, Colleen, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It's great talking to you, and I hope we can do future collaborations.
All right. When you've got something else to present, you need a forum, let us know.
Okay.
All right.
Take care now.